I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are Rewatching the Magic.
Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
All right, before we get going, we do have to talk about our sponsor, the Logan Awards. The Logan Whitehurst Memorial Awards for Excellence in Comedy Music. Nominations are open. Go to loganawards.com to submit your 5 favorite comedy songs. The only rule is that it has to have come out in calendar year 2020, January to December. There are 3 categories: Best Original Comedy Song, Best Parody Song, and Best Comedy Music Video. Nominations close May 28th. Let's do a little talk about that trailer that just dropped not too long ago. The trailer for Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings, or The Legend of the Ten Rings. I liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was, I thought it looked really compelling. I really liked, well, I mean, of course, the martial arts looked really, really good. I don't know who their fight coordinator is, but, what was in the trailer looked really great. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of that genre anyway. I like watching, you know, kind of all the dubbed Shaw Brothers and stuff like that kind of movies. So, this is right up my alley. So I liked it on that end. I liked the bits with Awkwafina. She was very funny in the trailer, and I like her generally. So I'm looking forward to her being the sidekick. I don't know a lot about the main actor who's playing Shang-Chi.
Neither do I. He's been really active on social media in the last couple of days, so he's already endearing himself to the fandom.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've heard good things. I'm just not really familiar with his work so far. So I'm holding out hope for him. I know Michelle Yeoh is in the movie, and I am also always a huge fan of hers. I love seeing her in anything. Please put her in more things. So that'll be great. I do like that they've worked really hard to get an Asian creative team as well.
Yeah.
So I know that the writer, director, I think one of the producers are all Asian. So they're trying to diversify behind the camera as well, which I like. It's been a problem, as we've mentioned on many of the movies we've covered, that, you know, the cast will be ethnically correct for the story they're telling, but the people writing it and kind of creating it behind the scenes don't have that same vision, and sometimes that causes problems. So I'm really, really hopeful for this one. Fingers crossed. The only problem is I know nothing about Shang-Chi. I know a little bit about the history that, like, Marvel wanted to do a comic version of the Kung Fu TV series, and they didn't get the rights because Warner Brothers at the time owned DC, I think, or had a deal with DC, and they told Marvel no. Like, you can't have it because you're a rival with DC. And so they instead got the rights to the character of Fu Manchu.
Yeah.
And somehow that worked out to, we're going to create the son of Fu Manchu that nobody ever heard about in the original books. And so, like, yeah.
Yeah, then they lost their rights to Fu Manchu, and they just decided to make him the son of the Mandarin.
Yes, and the Mandarin is just Fu Manchu with the serial number scraped off. So, you know, it's that kind of thing.
I'm finally glad we're actually going to see the real Mandarin.
Yeah, after the horribleness that was Ben Kingsley in the Iron Man films.
Great actor. He played the character of Trevor Slattery amazingly, but that wasn't the Mandarin.
Yeah, and it wasn't his fault. No hate on Ben Kingsley.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really wondering what they're going to do with this really infamous organization in the Marvel Comics universe. Because what they did to it in Iron Man was kind of shady. Did not like.
Yeah.
So, maybe we'll get a better, more fleshed out kind of thing for that organization, because it is a big deal in the Marvel Comics. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, so far liked it. Looking forward to it. Gonna see it. Good stuff, yeah. So far.
September, and hopefully they'll still be doing the dual Disney Plus theatrical releases like they've been doing with the last couple of movies. And
I've seen a few things that says only in theaters. I don't know if that's going to change. I think Disney is very flexible right now as to, you know, how the situation evolves, as I think most of us are. Mm-hmm. You know, get vaccinated. Get vaccinated. Yeah. I want to go to a movie theater again. It'd be nice.
All right. So that's, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Looks really cool. Yeah. I want to see Marvel's version of a kung fu movie.
I want to see almost anybody's version of a kung fu movie. More kung fu movies.
Yes.
Please.
Yes. All right, let's move on to what our main feature is today. Extra, extra, read all about it. Newsboys go on strike.
I am so happy we're finally talking about this movie.
Yeah, 1992's Newsies. The story of the Newsboy strike of 1899, which was not a financial success when this came out. This bombed pretty hard at the box office.
This was mocked mercilessly at the time.
And I can understand why. This is 1992. Like, yeah, the Disney Renaissance was starting and getting a good groove, but that was only working for the animation.
Yeah, live-action musicals, not a thing in the early 90s.
It really wouldn't be until, like, 2000 when Chicago won the Academy Award. Then everybody wanted to do live-action movie musicals. Even today, I mean, Moulin Rouge and Greatest Showman, and even now with the remake of West Side Story that's coming out.
Well, I think Moulin Rouge, the film came out first.
Mm.
Before Chicago, I think that was like 98, maybe.
My timeline.
Or 99. It made its money back. Like, people knew about it in the culture, but it wasn't like an overwhelming hit at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It got some awards and stuff, but not as much as Chicago. I mean, you're right about Chicago. For those of us who love musicals and movie musicals, it was a big deal for us, but I'm not sure how big a deal it was for everybody else. For even people who liked musicals, Newsies did not hit at the time.
I think that if this one was just a straight story without the songs, it might have been accepted.
Maybe, but I don't think it would have been as memorable.
Yeah, this movie made gangbusters on home video and on television. Yeah, it kind of got a cult following. To the point where Disney decided that they were going to put this on Broadway. And it became a very successful Broadway musical.
With Jeremy Jordan, who is red hot right now. That was, like, really a big get for, you know, that.
Yeah, you can actually see the stage version on Disney Plus.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it after I watched the original film, just to kind of see how they did. So I watched, like, the opening number to see how they did the staging and, you know, how they led into it. I haven't watched the whole thing yet. Started out pretty good. The filming is really interesting for a filmed live Broadway show. Mm-hmm. Very different than a lot of live Broadway shows.
I kind of want them to do more of those. I mean, we have Newsies, and technically they have the rights to Hamilton, and they have all of these Broadway shows just sitting in their vault. You know, bring out a film version of the Beauty and the Beast musical, and Lion King, and Aladdin, Mary Poppins, all of them. Put them on Disney Plus.
Yeah, I've long been a proponent of working out the residual pay for actors and crew and such to film more musicals, because I dislike that musicals are such a niche thing. There are musicals I love, I can sing the entire score to, I've never seen them on stage.
But the thing is, they want these musicals to be tourist attractions, so they purposely put those, you can only see these on stage, or you have to come to these cities and see them live, or wait till they go to your town and on tour.
I like that Disney is filming some of these things. Mm-hmm. I like that Hamilton is filmed. It's an important cultural touchstone. People need to understand it, and you can't understand it if you can't see it. You don't understand how songs work with it if you don't see the staging. And it's the same thing for something like Newsies. You know, some of these songs are really catchy, mm-hmm. but you don't understand how they work with the story until you can see the staging and how it works. And this is a really important story, as we will get into later. So let's talk about... That's enough of a tangent on that. Please film more things. Make theater accessible. Pay the artists while you're doing it. Please. We desperately want our theater community well paid. Let's talk about how this one ended up getting made.
All right. What do you got on?
So like we said, this is a true story. The Newsboy strike of 1899, it was really important because it was a strike started by youth. Mm. So it was not led by any adult figures. It wasn't like adult strike organizers came in and organized the children. It was a grassroots, movement. And so that made it interesting. Walt Disney wanted to make this movie, the studio that is, wanted to make this movie, and they wanted to make the musical. I don't really have a lot of background on how it was, originally pitched to there, but Disney decided to get one of its, side companies to finance it, and then it distributed it through Buena Vista, like it did a lot at the time. And it sent over its golden child writing duo at the time. Alan Menken and Howard Ashman, as we have talked about. You know, they were the then reigning stars of the Disney Renaissance.
And this would be right at the tail end of Ashman's life.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Ashman had to pass on this film. He had just revealed to Alan Menken that he was sick. He was dying from AIDS. He would not be able to continue on. So Menken took the project and brought in a new lyricist, Jack Feldman, to work on the project. If you want to know why the songs are so catchy, you got Alan Menken to thank for it. I noticed watching this film that Alan Menken kind of cribbed from his own sheet here, and I'm not sure which way it went. There is a song in this film called Santa Fe that Christian Bale's character sings about wanting to get out of the horrible situation he's in New York and live in the wonderful place, Santa Fe, this brand new town out west. And I noticed listening to it that I recognized the musical progression from another Alan Menken song. It is the exact same progression used in the bridge to a song called Home that appears in the Beauty and the Beast stage play.
When I dream on my own, I'm alone, but I ain't lonely.
What I'd give to return to the life that I knew lately.
Yeah, you hear that? Yeah. Very, very
actually,
close.
Actually, the Beauty and the Beast musical first performed in 1993, so a year after this movie came out.
Yeah, so maybe Menken just didn't have enough time, or maybe that's... It's a really catchy phrase. It's like this nice kind of minor progression that is just... It really sticks in your head. I found that fascinating when I was listening back to this, because I hadn't seen Newsies since I was a kid. But I listened to that Broadway soundtrack for Beauty and the Beast a lot, and Home is my favorite song on that. So when I heard it again as Santa Fe, I went, wait a minute! So I like it, but I also think it's interesting because both of those songs serve the same narrative place in the story, which is the main character wishing to be out of their current bad circumstances and at a place that feels more at home to them. So it's not just the music that's reused, it's the theme that, you know, it's the same theme as well, so I don't know.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the changes to historical accuracy that this movie does, mostly in the who led the strike, because in this movie we get the character of Jack Kelly, who did not actually exist.
Yeah, the thing is, sometimes this might be the best way to go. We've talked a lot of times about changing, you know, especially in like Pocahontas, we talked about how they made her story so happy and, you know, it really wasn't. And go look up the real story if you've got time to cry. But Jack Kelly is, he's kind of a mix of the two primary strike leaders. One was a guy named Louis Belletti, and he was nicknamed Kid Blink.
He's actually in the movie.
He is sort of in the movie. There is a kid with an eye patch that they refer to as Kid Blink. He is interestingly played by an actor named Trey Parker, and no, it is not that Trey Parker.
Not the South Park guy.
Yeah, it is not the same guy, although that they would be about the same age, I believe, maybe. But they kind of gave, you know, some lip service to the fact that Kid Blink was part of this movement. Another guy that worked with him was a guy named Morris Cohen, and they used part of his story to inspire the Christian Bale character, Jack Kelly, as well. They did take a lot of the story, you know, I'll kind of go through it when we go through the plot, but they did take little bits of the story and put it in. They just attributed it to Jack instead of the real people. I can kind of see how in some ways, if you're going to fictionalize the story in the way it's been fictionalized, it might be better to also do a fictional character. I really want to get into the plot of this, so let's do a quick rundown of who did this and who made this. First of all, I just want to mention that the director of this and choreographer as well is Kenny Ortega. We've mentioned him before because he also directed Hocus Pocus. and he would work with Disney again, strangely directing High School Musical 3. And you may also know him because he was the director, choreographer, producer of the Michael Jackson documentary, This Is It, that they were filming when Michael Jackson died. He also choreographed Dirty Dancing. So there you go. And Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So. Yeah. But anyway, Kenny Ortega, know him, love his work. Okay. We've talked about Christian Bale before when we talked about Pocahontas, because he did a voice in there, and also when we talked about Treasure Planet. So, we've talked about Christian Bale. You know who Christian Bale is. We don't need to talk about him before.
Great singing voice, though.
He really did. And the interesting thing is he did two musicals right about this time as he was starting his career, because he started as a younger kid, most famously in Empire of the Sun, the Spielberg movie. But as he hit his kind of teenage years, he did Swing Kids as well, right at the same time. So he did Newsies and Swing Kids, which were both musicals, right about that time. And then he did Pocahontas, and I think he did sing a little bit in Pocahontas. And he did Velvet Goldmine, but I can't off the top of my brain right now remember if he actually sang in Velvet Goldmine, even though it was kind of a musical. And then he kind of moved away from musicals. So, like, right there in the 90s, he had a whole chunk of being around musicals, and then it was like he became too serious for him or something. I don't know.
Although a modern Broadway musical starring Christian Bale would sell tickets like gangbusters.
Yeah. And, you know, it works for somebody like Hugh Jackman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he does all these, like, big serious things, including a movie with Christian Bale. and all, but he still does go back to the stage and do musicals and do, you know, you just mentioned Greatest Showman. Christian Bale, go back to, you've gotten very dour and very, like, method actor-y, and I don't like that. You need to not. you need to go back and
have some fun with your acting.
Yeah, do that.
Hey, moving on.
Playing opposite Christian Bale is David Mosco. He is fascinating because he is also young Tom Hanks in the movie Big,
which is also on Disney Plus.
Yeah, also on Disney Plus now. I mean, it is a Disney movie now.
Yeah.
He's also interesting in something we've already mentioned, because he helped somebody that we just mentioned, one of his things, the great Lin-Manuel Miranda. Moscow helped produce the first production of In the Heights, which launched Lin-Manuel Miranda's career.
Yeah, another movie musical that's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, not with Disney, though.
No.
That will be over on HBO Max, I believe. Mosco and his then-partner, Kerry Washington, who you may recognize, the actress Kerry Washington, were the two backers of that first run of In the Heights. So we sort of have this guy to thank for Lin-Manuel Miranda's career as well, I think. He's kind of interesting. He's an activist, especially with conservation and housing issues. Pretty interesting guy, still out there producing, and does the occasional acting role as well, I believe. But I think he's mostly moved into producing and other things now. We're going to mention one that is kind of a big one for us millennials. Max Casella as Racetrack. He's the one that's kind of always chomping on the cigar. You see him really early in the movie. And if you ever watch Doogie Howser, you immediately recognize this guy. He was Neil Patrick Harris's best friend, Vinny Delpino. He has shown up recently in Boardwalk Empire for HBO. He also was in Sopranos for a while when that was still on the air. He worked again with Disney. He was the original Timon on Broadway for The Lion King. And then he's also done some voice work for Disney again, especially in the Little Mermaid sequel, Return to the Sea. So, he shows up now and then, and for people of mine and Tuesday's age, when you see Max Casella, you're like, oh. Also, if you are a gamer, he is Daxter in the Jack and Daxter series. So, you know. If you're into that series at all, you recognize his voice from that as well. Moving on to the final one of the kids we're going to talk about, the character of Spot Conlon, who's the leader of the Brooklyn section of the Newsies. This guy is Gabriel Damon. He has retired from acting, but he's another big one for us millennials. We probably know him best as the voice of Littlefoot the Apatosaurus in The Land Before Time. I also remember him for a really interesting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation called The Bonding, where he becomes Worf's brother. It's a really, you know, kind of interesting thing. He was everywhere in the 80s and 90s as a child actor. So he was everywhere in the 80s and 90s, once you see his face, if you were watching a lot of stuff at the time, you'll be like, oh yeah, him. Very memorable face. But he retired in 2006, and he decided to become a real estate agent.
Whatever pays the bills.
I'm not with you on that. Go back to acting. But anyway, he's apparently out there doing his thing. Good luck to him. Please come back to acting. So moving on to our kind of adult, cast in here, with the side of the good guys, we have the wonderful Bill Pullman.
Yep, as reporter Brian Denton.
Yeah, he is a reporter that thinks that the Newsies strike really deserves some coverage in a paper not owned by one of the people impacted by it. What do you say about Bill Pullman?
The legend.
Yeah. I mean, Spaceballs alone would just put him in...
Independence Day.
In that speech in Independence Day... I mean, how do you get better than that? But, you know, I mean, he's also in Sleepless in Seattle, and, you know, he showed up in, like, Casper. Do you ever remember he was the dad in Casper, you know?
Yeah.
He was in the movie Titan A.E., which I loved. We've talked about it before. We've kind of name-checked that movie before.
As soon as it gets on Disney Plus, it's going on the list.
Yeah, I mean, it is a Fox film, so but anyway, I absolutely love Bill Pullman. I am very sad his career is not as robust as it used to be. I'm not saying that he's not. I mean, he is still working. He's not working in as flashy a roles, I guess. I would just want to see Bill Pullman in anything. Put Bill Pullman in more things. I really like him as an actor, and I really want to see him in more things. I will say, especially since we lost the other Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
I'm really holding on to Bill Pullman and wanting to see him in more things. So moving on, as a vaudeville singer that helps our Newsies, we have Anne Margaret, another legend. Probably best known for Bye Bye Birdie. If you've ever seen even 2 seconds of Bye Bye Birdie, you can't forget her. But of course, you know, she's continued working. Right about the time she did Newsies, she also did the Grumpy Old Men movies. And she keeps showing up every now and then on television and stuff. Wonderful. And of course, she's used to really good effect here as a singer, you know? Yeah. I mean, what else are you gonna do?
They don't play enough of her song in this movie.
Her songs, that's weird, and we'll get into it, but maybe not used to her full ability, but it was nice to see her. So, moving on, as kind of our villain of the movie here, we have Robert Duvall as Joseph Pulitzer. Mm-hmm. And, Robert Duvall, again, another legend. It's so hard to talk about some of these people because it's like, well, which, you know, 3 or 4 things in a stellar career do you mention? Robert Duvall really first showed up as Boo Radley in the To Kill a Mockingbird movie. If you've ever seen George Lucas's first film, THX 1138, he's Thex. He's the main character. You know him from Bullet and the original True Grit. Of course, he's in The Godfather and Godfather Part 2. He's in the original Handmaid's Tale movie. I don't know what more to say. You know who Robert Duvall is. Come on. All right. Moving on, though, we want to talk about this plot, because this is a great plot.
So, yeah, we have... So let's get into the movie. 1899, we've got the newsies, the newsboys. Most of them are orphans. We first see them in their lodging house. This one lodging house where all the newsboys and sleep. But pretty much as soon as daybreak hits, they're woken up. Hey, got to go to work. And we get our big opening number, Carrying the Banner.
This one is this is an earworm. There are a lot of earworms in this.
It is.
But, you know, central to this film and the plot is how newspaper selling worked at the time. So I think we gotta just kind of mention that.
Yeah, there wasn't, like, today you could probably go any store and buy a newspaper, or even going to those little machines where you put a few coins in and you get a newspaper out of it. That really wasn't the thing back then.
Yeah, there were people who did subscribe to the newspaper. You know, so homeowners would have the newspaper delivered to them.
Paper boys.
Maybe some businesses would. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you had typically children who would buy papers from the publisher, in this case, Pulitzer. And in the morning, they would buy a certain number of papers. You see them doing it at the beginning of the movie, based on what the headline is that day, how many copies they think they can sell. So they will purchase a certain number of papers at a kind of a cut rate. And then they'll go on the street and they'll talk people into buying a newspaper.
That's where you get the little kids going, extra, extra, read all about it.
There you go. That is exactly what it was. And this whole thing, as we... is pointed out very explicitly in the film, is run on child labor. That's how most newspapers got sold. But it was also kind of a scam, because the child would put down a certain amount of money at the beginning of the day to buy, say, 50 papers. And if he only sold 40 papers, he's out the money for those final 10 papers.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always kind of a gambling thing. You know, how many papers do you think he can sell? Because you had kind of one shot at it. You can't go back for more papers, really.
Yeah.
You know, you make your wager at the beginning of the day, you put your money down, you take the papers, and you do whatever it takes to sell the papers. As we see at the beginning of the movie. Yeah,
we see in the movie some of the kids are not very favorable to the headline, so they'll try to sell the paper based on some of the other stories in the paper. Kid born with two heads.
Yeah, or Jack turns a small garbage fire that scared some seagulls into, how does he word it, panicked flight for massive conflagration, you know, many in danger. And it turns out it's just seagulls. It's buried on page 9. But it gets people to buy papers. So we see that, Jack is kind of the ringleader and the mentor to all the other newsies. He tends to know where the good selling spots are, what the good tricks are. He likes taking other newsies in, under his wing and teaching them. Not necessarily for free, as we see right up front.
Yeah. Also, we do have to mention this. There is another strike going on as this is happening with the trolley company.
Yeah. That is in the background at the beginning. We see the newsies talk about the fact that the trolley strike has been the main headline on their, on Pulitzer's paper for, 3 weeks now, and it's really boring because nothing's happening. It's just the strike continues. That's not very flashy. You can't really sell a paper with that. So the newsies aren't really that happy. And Jack notices, during their morning pickup, two new boys in the line.
David and Les Jacobs.
Yeah. Now Les, the younger one, is really adorable. And Jack is like, oh man. With that adorable face, if I taught him a few underhanded tricks, we could sell so many newspapers. But David isn't really that sure. David's like, no, we want to do this ethically, and we want to, and Jack is immediately like, you're not going to make any money. Like,
yes, David and Les have their story. Their dad worked in a factory. He got hurt, and now he's out of a job. So the boys have to quit school and go to work, and the only job that they can do right now is selling papes.
Yeah. That is the one kind of annoying thing in this movie, is that they keep saying papes. It's probably accurate to the time. A lot of the things are, like the fact that they keep referring to beating somebody up as soaking them. Mm. You know, we're going to go out and soak the scabs, you know. That was actually the slang at the time. There's quotes from Kid Blink saying those same kind of words. So I get why it's in there, and possibly the thing about papes is accurate, but it sounds so wrong.
The slang of the time.
Yeah, maybe.
And the thing about, you know, to kind of skip around here, the thing about the kid's father, David and Les's father, is that he's not in a union. So that's why the kids have to go to work, because he's not getting paid to not work.
Yeah, and he has no recourse for the injury either. Mm-hmm. He got injured on the job. They're not going to pay for his injury. They're not going to pay, and he's... we don't even know if he's going to have a job with the same factory when he gets better. Mm-hmm. I think they're just hoping he can get a job with some factory. Because without a union, it was not the standard that they would hold your job for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a lot of jobs, it's not now, you know. Mm-hmm. But we find out very early on that David and Les's family is very pro-union. They're supporting the trolley workers on strike. Their father wishes that he had a union job. Mm-hmm. So we already see kind of the pro-union sentiment in the Jacobs family well before anything starts with the newsies. But on their first day, Jack sees Les. David says, you know, you're not going to take my adorable brother and use him for your own means. So David and Jack strike a deal. I think it's 60-40 they finally come to.
Well, David, firstly, it was like 70-30, and then David kind of 50-50. Bargains. Yeah. He wanted 50-50, and they compromised to 60-40.
Yeah. So, but David...
Off the bat, Jack sees that David's a smart kid.
Yeah. He doesn't just... It's very obvious that Jack doesn't just see them as exploitable labor. Yeah, he wants something out of them, but it's not really without caring. He mm-hmm. sees that they don't know the ropes. So he gives them a little bit of advice for free, and he makes them this offer. And it's not like a... You take this offer or I'll break your legs kind of offer. It's an honest offer. I think we can sell more papers together. And so they team up. And Jack teaches Les little tricks like pretending he's sick and also British. I don't really know how the "and also British" works, but okay. Mm. And he teaches David the tricks like we already talked about, like finding the story on page 9 and turning it into a story that has technically happened, but not in the way you'd say.
Yeah.
And they're doing really well their first day. I mean, they really do kind of clean up that first day.
Yeah. But, things are about to change, because we move on to Mr. Pulitzer, who has noticed a severe dip in his newspaper sales over the last few weeks in covering this trolley strike. Because that's the only news story that's out there, that's the only news story they can put on the front page, and people are kind of bored about that story. He's even saying, hey, Hearst is putting this on, is trying to tie other stories into this trolley strike. He's selling more papers than I do. How do we make up for the lost money we got? So his advisors, his other board members or whatever they are, go to different ideas. Hey, we could start cutting wages, and they don't want to do that.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to stop you real quick. I've left my TV on.
Go ahead.
Ooh, okay. What time is it now? The Chauvin verdict is in, but the jury is not in to be announced. CNN is saying that maybe as early as 4:30 Eastern, they might read it. So I'm going to interrupt you when they start to go to the courtroom, because I need to hear this.
All right.
Because that's gonna decide if we end up having violence tonight or not.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so just know that that's going on. Let's do as much as we can.
All right. So, Pulitzer doesn't like the idea of cutting wages, especially to the higher-ups, including himself. So they come up with the idea to increase the price of the newspaper. More specifically, increasing the charge that they charge the newsboard, the newsies, to buy the papers. And that'll be enough to balance out what they've lost in the last few weeks of lost sales due to slow news involving the trolley strike.
Yeah. So if you charge the newsies, say, an extra tenth of a penny per paper, doesn't seem like a lot, but once you add it up over hundreds of thousands of papers across the city, now you're making bank.
Yeah. So, and as this is going on, the kids get in trouble, as kids tend to do. And they run into the local theater where we meet Anne Margaret's character, Mita Larkson, who knows Jack. How they know each other, we're not quite sure.
Well, she does kind of say that he used to come sit in the balcony all the time and watch her. Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe in better times before he ends up in the refuge and all the other stuff, mm-hmm. He probably really liked going to the theater. Maybe he went to the theater with his father.
Mm-hmm.
A cute kid. He's only 17 when we meet him, so if she's known him for quite a while, maybe she met him when he was 10 or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I kind of get it. You know, if you do that sort of job for long enough, you get to know the regulars that come to the theater all the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
And this gives Les a chance to try out the new tricks that Jack has taught him by using his cute adorableness to sell papers. And Maida just looks at him saying, oh, you're good.
Yeah, and she respects him, like, you know, one professional to another, because we find out very quickly that Meta's thing is that she pretends to be Swedish or something. Mm-hmm. And she's really just, you know, from one of the boroughs, you know, it's not, she's not foreign at all. Mm-hmm. So it's very obvious that she's running a scam too, with her characters. So she immediately is like, all right, you'll go far, kid. You got the talent.
Respect the hustle.
Yeah.
Game recognizes game. And, you know, she lets him stay, and watch her performance as they're hiding from people who want to cause them bodily harm. And we get her song, Lovey Dovey Baby, which we don't get enough of in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, the soundtrack only has it for like 90 seconds, but I don't think we even get that in the movie.
The thing is that neither of her songs are really that great, and they're just there to provide padding. She's very underutilized in the movie. I haven't seen the play yet. I don't really know how or even if they utilize the character in the play. But it's obvious that they were kind of like, we need some kind of famous singing star and they need to sing something. Mm-hmm. So they got Anne Margaret and they gave her a few bars to sing. But we start to get at this point in the movie that something isn't on the up and up about Jack.
Yeah, he gives his story that his folks have moved out to Santa Fe, and as soon as he has enough money, he's going to go join them.
Yeah, they're looking for a ranch or something, and once they get their land, they're going to send for him, or he's going to make enough money and go out and join them. Early, you know.
Yeah.
But at one point while they're hustling, they run afoul of the law, and Jack seems really scared. Even more so than the other two boys.
Yeah, as this happening, they end, as they're leaving the theater, they end up right in the middle of a fight between the striking trolley workers and the scab trolley workers. And this is where the cops come in. And he has to hide because he doesn't want to get caught by the cops.
Yeah. And there's something very strange about his aversion to cops that is starting to get the audience noticing that there's something not right here.
So, yeah, to avoid all the hustle and bustle of this strike battle, David just says, come to my house. We'll get out of here. You can come to my house, meet my folks.
Yeah, wait till the streets calm down. Yeah.
So they get there and they meet the family, especially, Jack starting to kind of give the eyes to David's older sister, Sarah.
Yeah, it is kind of an interesting meet cute when she asked Jack, like, what makes a good headline, and he's like, you know, murder, corpse, nude. And the weird thing is,
This is a callback to Hearst newspaper, which says, nude corpse found at trolley tracks not connected to strike.
Yeah, we see that earlier in the film, yeah, the funny thing is that it's very obvious that he is hitting on the daughter, and you would think, like, okay, 1899, this kid is hitting on your daughter, but the parents are just kind of like, aw, young love, talk more about nudity. they're really, really chill parents.
Apparently, this is also the father's birthday, so they have cake.
Yeah, the night before, he knows that they're hiding cake, and they're like, no, tomorrow's your birthday, and he's like, you know what, this is much more interesting an occasion, let's have the cake tonight, because the boys actually brought home a respectable sum of money from the way the parents act.
Yeah, I mean, not bad for your first day in the job.
Yeah, I mean, it seems obvious that they're looking for any bit of help. We also know that Sarah is working as well. She seems to be some sort of seamstress, laundress, something working with clothes.
Mm-hmm.
We keep seeing her carrying around baskets of clothes and doing little bits of hand sewing and stuff. So it seems that she's probably working with a laundry or some minor repair. So the children are working. Maybe the mother is working as well.
Mm-hmm.
We never find out, but the children are definitely working to help pay the rent. And the boys have done a pretty good job that first day. So they get Jack to stay for dinner. They have cake. They even invite him to stay, but Jack says, no, I got my own place. You know, they're going to be waiting for me. So I got to go. And then we get the song I was talking about earlier, Santa Fe.
Does this count as an I Want song?
I do believe that this is our I Want song for the film, yeah.
He talks about how he doesn't have a family, and he says that he, you know, it's not, you know, that's a family if you want it, but it's very clear the way he says it that he kind of wants a family.
Yeah, and this is our first time that we know for a fact that he's really lying about this story.
Yeah.
He's told them, like, oh, you know, I got a mom and a pa, and they're out in Santa Fe. They're going to send for me. You know, I got a loving family. It'll be great. And this song immediately tells us that is a lie. He's never been to Santa Fe. He has no family. Nobody's waiting for him. And it's kind of heartbreaking as a song.
He even says he also wants to get out of New York and go somewhere else. And the only place he can think of to go is Santa Fe.
And he says, I forget the exact line, but it's basically where you got no future even by 17.
Yeah.
I feel you, dude. but the interesting thing is in the middle of this song, dude steals a horse.
Well, he is the cowboy.
Like, Jack, that is a hanging offense, okay? You do not steal a horse, my man, okay? You want the cops brought down on you, you steal a horse. Like, why is this never talked about again in the movie? That is a mess. That's like stealing, like, a top-of-the-line sports car would be. Like, you are down for some serious time, my dude. Okay? Leave the horse alone.
So, yeah, we fast forward to the next day, and the kids are not happy that the price has been raised significantly, that not all of them can afford to buy the number of papers that they're used to, which
yeah,
means they're not
going
to make the money that they normally do.
And they buy their papers from a guy named Mr. Wiesel, who they call Weasel.
Yeah.
And he really is a bootlicker for Pulitzer.
Yeah, they go directly to the printing place and buy it directly there. And yeah, they call him Weasel because he's just a jerk to them all the time.
Yeah, I mean, leave Weasels out of it. Weasels are noble and wonderful creatures, but mm-hmm. I get it. So he has these two enforcers, the Delaney brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of them really push these kids around. We see in the first two scenes, where we meet David and Les, that they constantly try to, give them the wrong number of papers. They're always trying to nickel and dime them out of things, throwing their weight around, threatening violence. So, you know. Not great people trying to scam orphan children.
Yeah.
But they run the presses, you know, they've got the printing presses in the building, and they bring the papers hot off the presses and hand them right to the newsies at the beginning of every day. So the interesting thing is that they kind of, This is another kind of bit of historical inaccuracy, because for the most part, Newsies would sell the afternoon edition. The morning edition, everybody would come and buy or get delivered to their house. Mm-hmm. But without television, you would need, you know, I mean, news doesn't happen just once a day. Mm-hmm. So the afternoon edition would come out with all the latest breaking news. And this is when the Newsies would come in. So a lot of these kids, a lot of them even went to school, and they would go to school in the morning. They would get out of school, immediately go buy their papers, and spend the rest of the afternoon into the evening selling the afternoon edition. The thing is that many of them worked past midnight, because if you don't sell that paper, you're out that money. Mm-hmm. So they would refuse to go home or go to sleep or wherever they were going until they sold that last paper, and they would stay up and walk the streets way late into the night, which was one of the problems with the system, one of the things they complained about. So the idea of the Newsies getting up at the crack of dawn to go get the not exactly the way the whole system kind of did, but I get why they did it for the movie. It's easier than, you know, than trying to explain all this as I just did. But Jack gets into a fight with Weasel and the Delaneys. Mm-hmm. We're not going to pay. And Weasel's like, what you going to do about it? You can't do nothing. You're a bunch of kids. And he's like, well, we'll go on strike. And they're like, you can't go on strike. You don't have a union. And David comes up with the idea of like, well, if we say we're a union, why aren't we a union? Union's just a group of people. If we say right now we're the Newsboys Union, we're the Newsboys Union. And so Jack's like, yeah. And David's like, but, you know, strikes get violent and stuff. And you know, I got a family I got to feed. And, you know, David and Les are the ones with something to lose. Mm-hmm. The rest of these boys are orphans or runaways, maybe, or, you know, they sleep in the Newsboys' house, but they're basically homeless.
Mm-hmm. The beginning of the movie, we see some of the Newsboys sleeping on statues.
Yeah. I mean, they're just laying in the street, mm-hmm. you know. So most of the Newsies have nothing really to lose except for the threat of violence, which was, you know, always a big part of labor issues. But David is not convinced. He's like, this could get very bad, and we really need that money. But Jack breaks into song, like you do.
The world will know.
I love this song. Maybe my favorite song in the whole film. It is rousing. It makes you want to, like, get out into the streets and march. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does feel like a protest song.
It really is. Like, when you hear that bell every day, are you going to hear it? No!
It really is a song of trying to convince everyone of what it's going to take to pull off this strike.
Yeah, and they know that they cannot do this with just them.
Yeah, because they're really only the Newsies for the middle of Manhattan.
Yeah, so they have to go to all the other New York boroughs and get all of those kids together if this strike is actually going to work. And he starts sending up one representative of them to the different boroughs to convince the other kids to join their cause.
Yeah.
It comes to a point where no one wants to go to Brooklyn.
Yeah, because Spot scares people.
Yeah.
But they send, they say, we'll go to see Spot ourselves, but first, we're gonna go talk to Pulitzer and give him our demands.
Goes about as well as you think it will.
Yeah, they walk in and say, we want to see Pulitzer. They're immediately thrown out, and that's that. So off to Brooklyn we go to meet with Spot.
we're skipping ahead here, because this is where the reporter, this is where Bill Pullman comes in.
Ah, yes, okay.
Reporter Brian Denton witnesses the entire scenario, and he's on their side. He's saying this is a news story worth telling.
Yeah, he really wants to talk to him. You know, let's sit down and talk about this, and takes him out to lunch, you know. And Jack has one kind of major thing.
No pictures.
No pictures. Do not want my picture in the paper. You can use my name. Make sure you spell my name right. No pictures. So we got another red flag.
Yeah. So they finally, there's a very cool shot of the kids on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah, it's really nice. I like it.
So Jack and David and one of the other kids go to Brooklyn to meet with the Brooklyn kids and their leader Spot, who isn't interested in striking. Like, he likes the idea of showing the higher-ups that we're not going to get pushed around, but he doesn't think that the Manhattan kids are tough enough to handle what happens during a strike.
Yeah, you can tell that the Brooklyn kids are very hands-on.
Yeah.
They're the tough kids. And they really don't think, you know, we've already seen the violence that comes with strikes. We've seen cops go in there. We've seen fights between strikers and scabbers. Mm-hmm. And Spot's like, you do not have the stomach or the fists for this, my dude. And he's like, nah, I want to stick it to the man. Sticking it to the man is great. It's what I'm all about, but you are not the man to lead us.
Yeah. So they even said, if we see that you're tough enough, we'll consider joining the strike. But for right now, we're just going to sit by. Which doesn't bode well, because now none of the other boroughs want to join in because Brooklyn is not in on it.
Yeah, no Brooklyn, no inter-borough union.
Which kind of brings the Manhattan kids down until David kind of gives them a pep talk with the most popular song from this musical, Seize the Day.
Yep. This is the one that you always hear in marketing for this one.
Yeah, this is the one song from this movie that they actually play in the Disney parks.
Yeah, and it's a good one. Thematically, I like The World Will Know Better, but this one has more of a catchy tune.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. I get why this is the one they kind of hung their hat on. But it's a really good one, you know. David kind of gets them all together, gets them ready for the fight, and you know, once he kind of pumps them up, they show up at the distribution center. They show up to Weasel and they start destroying the newspapers.
They wreck it up.
They wreck the joint. And Weasel responds the way that you would expect him to. He calls the Delaneys, and the Delaneys go out to bust some heads.
And they specifically go after the, lack of a better term, the slowest member of the team, Crutchy. A little disabled kid that walks on a crutch.
Yeah, and honestly, again, historically accurate, the sorts of strike breakers and counter protesters and stuff that show up at events like this will specifically surround and separate disabled or weaker looking members, however you want to define that, in order to make an easy example of them. And that's what they do with Crutchy. They surround him and they drag him away screaming.
And they rough him up pretty bad. Even we'll find out later how roughed up he is.
Yeah.
But they rough him up pretty bad and they put him in this juvenile detention center called The Refuge.
And this is when we kind of get more of the full story of our hero, Jack. Mm-hmm. We now find out why Jack has been running the whole time. Jack used to be imprisoned in the refuge until a rather daring escape.
Involving then New York Governor Theodore Roosevelt.
And war hero. Yeah, this was, he was the war hero at the time, and then he mm-hmm. became governor.
And later president.
And later president. But at the time of this movie, he is the governor. Yeah. The refuge is said to be a place where they send orphaned boys, maybe girls, but we only ever see boys. And it is run by a guy named Warden Snyder, and Jack specifically says that this guy refuses food and medicine and other amenities to the inmates because he is embezzling money. He is skimming off the top, and he is overcrowding the facility in order to get more money from the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. The city or the state, whatever.
So they're gonna bust Crutchy out of the refuge. But things don't go everywhere. As Crutchy had said that they banged him up pretty well to the point where he's walking slower than normal and he doesn't want to slow them down because he's on a crutch and he's been banged up pretty bad. And he said, Jack says, don't worry, we'll carry you if you have to. And in a bit of pride, Chris says, no one carries me. No one carries me. I will stay here if I have to, but I'm not going to let you guys get caught because of me.
Yeah, he really is thinking of the rest of the boys at this point in a bit of self-sacrifice. It's very obviously apparent that they've busted up his good leg.
Yeah.
So, he kind of runs interference with the warden so that Jack can, get away again without being seen. And that's where we leave Crutchy for the time being. Mm-hmm. But the next morning when the newsies show up to wreck the place again, they are met by, strike breakers. Mm-hmm. These were, for those who might not know, these were typically hired goons. hired goons. That would be brought in to just do extra legal violence. Sometimes, as you see in the movie, the cops would also be there. Sometimes they would join in on the violence. Sometimes they would just watch and pretend not to see the violence.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with modern day.
Yeah, yeah. This movie has nothing to do with anything going on right
Although,
now.
In a bit of historical accuracy, they actually do put Kid Blink in the on the front line as this is happening.
Yeah, they do point out that Kid Blink is there, at least. But I mean,
Jack is like right behind Kid Blink, so he's up.
Yeah.
They're trying to do some sort of historical accuracy by having him, I guess, the public face leader, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. So, but with Kid Blink and Jack leading the way, they go in to wreck the joint again, but they are trapped, surrounded by strike breakers and cops, and they start getting their rear ends beat. I mean, it does not look good for our newsies.
No. Until, never fear, Brooklyn is here. as Spot and the Brooklyn Kids show up and start just hurling marbles with
their slingshots and their, they get all Dennis the Menace up in here. This is a good bit of slapstick. It kind of negates the, not negates, but it kind of brings down the harshness of these are grown ass men beating up children. Mm-hmm. That's what this is. Let's not sugarcoat this. All of the actors playing the Strike Breakers are very obviously in their late 30s, 40s. They are adults. And the people they are beating up are actual children.
Mm-hmm. But it's enough. This little attack by the Brooklyn Kids are enough to turn the tide, and they and the two teams of kids run off the Strike Breakers.
Yeah. And guess who happens to be there with a camera to get the whole thing? Our good friend Bill Pullman. Yeah, Denton's there with his camera and his little pad of paper, and he takes a big old picture of the jubilant newsies right there, gets it put on the front page of his newspaper, which is The Sun. And despite his earlier no picture thing, Jack is thrilled to have his picture on the front page.
He's smiling. I mean, yeah. He even says, you know, at first he's kind of apprehensive, but said, I'm just, one picture won't hurt.
Yeah, and the boys are again in the diner being bought food by Denton, and they're arguing about, like, well, who cares if we're on the front page of a paper? And Racetrack is like, are you kidding? If you get yourself on the front page of a paper in America, you own America. Like, we live off of fame here in America. Have you not seen us?
Yeah, for better or worse, and which leads us to the next song, The King of New York.
This one is also, like, a really good kind of toe-tapping, you know, this is a really good feel-good song.
Bill Pullman got some pipes on him for this one.
Yeah, he does really well in this. And this is a really good dance sequence, too. There's a lot of tap dancing on tables, and yeah. Mm-hmm. The really good choreography in this scene. I like the way they use the small space and all of the chairs and the tables and the silverware and plates and stuff. Really good. I love this one.
So yeah, they plan to hold a rally with all of the kids from all of the New York boroughs to kind of rally everybody up and, you know, solidify their stance with their strike.
This actually more or less did happen. There was a massive newsboy rally that this is based off of that was led by Kid Blink.
I think this is really the only reason Meta is in the movie, because it's her theater.
Yeah.
And they need a theater, and this is their shortcut to get to doing that.
Yeah. So they put the word out, hey, we're going to hold a rally. While they do this, Warden Snyder sees a picture, and Crutchy, who is now being forced to be kind of the personal servant to Snyder, bringing him his food and stuff as part of his punishment, kind of lets it slip about Jack.
Hey, Jackie, they got his good side.
Yeah, and Snyder's like, wait a minute. So he recognizes that as the face of his escapee, and he goes to the newsies, what's it called?
The rally?
No, not the rally. He goes to the bunk
the boarding house
first.
The boarding house?
So Snyder goes to the boarding house that the newsies are staying in, and he asks the guy who runs the boarding house, like, do you know Jack Kelly? And fortunately, that guy is a mensch. And he's like, Jack Kelly? Nope, don't know Jack Kelly. Any of you boys know Jack Kelly? And they start doing the, nah, we don't know Jack. Oh, wait, we saw Jack Kelly once, but he ain't here no more. And they do this really nice little choreography where they're kind of constantly hiding Jack and moving him around behind the back of Snyder while he's there.
So he can get out.
So Jack is able to get out and have breakfast with Sarah. He goes over to the Jacobs apartment building and to the roof, probably spends the night there.
Well, Sarah finds him sleeping outside of her room.
Yeah, not creepy. But she ends up having breakfast with him, and they talk about Santa Fe, and he says that he really wants to go, but now he's kind of wondering because he's never had anybody to miss him before.
Mm-hmm. So, also, he never had a reason to stay.
Yeah.
Maybe Sarah might be his reason to stay, you know?
We don't know. Hmm? But, so, they've got the rally. And
we are skipping ahead here. So, Pulitzer, he wants to break this, wants to end this strike right now, but he can't exactly arrest these kids because it is within their legal right to strike, but if one of the leaders of these unions happens to be a felon, then they can just go in there and arrest him. This is where we get Snyder back in. Apparently, Snyder and Pulitzer know each other very well.
Yeah,
technically he was reading their competitions newspaper earlier that day.
Yeah. We also see in this scene that Pulitzer basically controls the mayor.
Yeah.
So, they are, they're going to hold a big police raid at the rally.
Yep. Because, Jack Kelly escaped from the, escape from the refuge, and technically that makes him a felon.
Yeah. So, we've got all the newsies gathering at Meta's theater.
Mm-hmm.
And they're giving speeches. Once again, this is historically accurate. That they did have a rally, and various members of the union gave speeches. And it's basically what you think it would be. You know, we're going to stick together. We're not going to start any more violence. You know, we're going to take the peaceful route. Let's not give the police any reason to mess with us.
At the same time, Pulitzer has pulled a meeting of all of the newspaper owners in the city, and they've made an agreement to not cover the Newsy strike.
Yep, they have decided to blacklist all news of this strike until it's over and done with and Pulitzer breaks the strike.
Mm-hmm.
So the most important part of that scene though is that Hearst is also there, and Hearst is the reason this whole thing got started. Pulitzer and Hearst trying to make more money than each other was the point of them taking money from the newsies in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So, it really does show that this isn't really about money per se. It's more about winning and power.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a high score rather than necessary money.
We even see Pulitzer pretend to choke out Hearst as he's introducing everyone to each other. But it's like, hey, we're going to put aside our rivalry to bust this union.
Yeah. That's what you call class consciousness, folks. But we go back to the rally, and Meta is decided to perk up everybody's spirits by singing High Times, Hard Times. Basically, times are tough, but they're going to get better someday, so just stick with it, kid. This song is awful.
Not a good use of Anne Margaret.
This is a bad use of everything. This song is just a stinker. This movie very undeservingly won several, or at least was nominated for several, Raspberry Awards for worst thing, like worst picture and worst, actor and things like that. This song actually was the only thing that won a Razzie. This was worst original song. And, yeah, deserved. Super deserved. This song is awful. Maybe the worst thing Alan Menken ever wrote. Please never play it again. But as she finishes the song, the police, Snyder sneaks in and Denton recognizes him and kind of tips off the boys with like, "Oh, aren't you Warden Snyder? You're Warden Snyder. Hey, look, everybody, Warden Snyder's here. Why don't I get a picture of you for my paper?" You know, because he's warning Jack, get out.
And they almost do it, but then here comes the cops to bust this whole thing down.
And a huge fight breaks out. This is actually a real, this is a really good fight scene. I really like the fight choreography in this. There's a lot of, going upstairs and falling downstairs and using, the theater props and things like that. I really do like the way this whole thing is filmed and set up. But unfortunately, no matter how much they fight, Jack, along with most of the newsies we've been following, are arrested.
Now, for the most part, the judge here merely fines most of the newsies, but he fines them $5 each, which in 1899 money is a lot.
Yeah, and they're broke orphans that we know have been living on maybe a quarter a day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's kind of all of their pocket change. They say in a lyric at the beginning of the movie that they make money and spend it that same day. The only thing they keep is enough money to buy tomorrow's newspaper.
Yeah. But Denton is there, and Denton pretty much bails out all the kids.
They're like, yay, you know, hey, cool, Denton's here, yay, Denton. And then Jack is brought in.
And we find out that Jack Kelly is not his real name.
Yeah, his real name is Francis Sullivan, and he did have parents. His mother has unfortunately died, but his father is still living and is incarcerated in real adult jail.
Yeah.
Snyder and the judge seem to know each other and be real buddy-buddy and have kind of a backdoor kind of thing going on. Mm-hmm. So, Jack is sentenced to stay in the refuge until he is 21. The longest they can hold him. Mm-hmm. So, the newsies are very upset because Jack has lied to them.
Yeah, he lied to them about everything.
Yeah. And so Jack is off to the refuge and the newsies are really crestfallen, and even more so because Denton, after he pays their fines, he takes them all back to the diner and he tells them, your story didn't run. Nobody knows that the police beat you up last night. They don't know about the rally. They don't know about Jack. And my newspaper has reassigned me to be a foreign war correspondent. I can't report on this anymore.
Yeah, he even says, sometimes they don't fire you.
And he says they'll blacklist him if he tries. Mm-hmm. And not just his paper. He won't just get fired from his paper. He will be blacklisted from working as a reporter for any paper in the nation.
Pulitzer had that kind of power.
Yeah, well, we just saw the backroom deal where all of the newspaper guys made a deal. I mean, you know, they're all in it together. So we know that this is possible. He's not just paranoid at this point. He knows exactly what they will do to him.
But he did write up a story on what happened, and he gives it to David saying, hey, at least someone gets to read it. And David is not interested.
Yeah, he kind of shoves it in his pocket and forgets about it.
Well, he actually crumbles it up and throws it on the table, and it's Les that uses the story to wrap up his sandwich as he's leaving.
Yeah. But we go to the newsies say, you know, this is not over. Okay, they're trying to beat us, but we won't be beat. So they decide they're going to break out Jack. Jack will know what to do. Let's break him out of the refuge and he'll tell us what to do. So they go to sneak in and they see Jack being brought out and put into a really nice carriage along with the warden and being taken away.
And Jack has a meeting with Pulitzer himself.
Which David follows him to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Pulitzer says, we gotta stop this. You're being a pain in my side, and I'm not gonna take it anymore. You can either stay in the refuge until you're 21, or you can be a free man tomorrow with a new suit of clothes. You will work for me.
And you'll have more money than you will ever earn in 3 lifetimes.
Yeah, I will give you all the money you need. You can go to Santa Fe when you're done. You know.
Yeah, when the strike is over, you're free to go wherever you want.
And Jack initially says no, but Pulitzer's like, or, you know, I can just have the cops round up all your friends and they can all be sent to the refuge too. I'm sure the warden would love that.
And yeah, he even Pulitzer also goes on that his newspaper has so much of an influence in the town. He tells them how to think, how to vote, basically gives them their opinion for them because he sees himself as that powerful of a man.
Yeah, he tells Jack that he used to be a soldier in the Civil War. And Jack says, did you win? And he said, it doesn't matter. I learned that what the newspaper says is the important thing. I have more power now than any general, than any, you know, I tell people what to think and they will do it.
So David sabotages the carriage enough for Jack to escape. And Jack is not happy about this at all.
Yeah, he tells David, like, if you're caught, you go to jail. You've got a family. You can't leave them. You've got to go earn money for your family. So run away and I'll go back.
Yeah, Jack turns himself in and goes back to the refuge.
Yeah.
And we get a one little reprise here of Santa Fe as you do in these kind of musicals, it's the introspection part where he has to decide what is the right thing to do in this scenario. And he knows that in his mind, he needs to get to Santa Fe in order to be free, as it were.
Yeah, I like this scene. It contains my favorite line in the movie because it's Jack in his little cell, you know, waiting for his decision. And Crutchy comes up and he's snuck a potato from the warden's dinner, because the warden takes all of the food that has been sent for the boys to eat, especially all the really good stuff, and he feeds the children scraps. But Crutchy, since he was delivering the warden's meal, he snuck the biggest potato off the plate and he brought it to Jack, and he's like, I'll probably get another couple of months, but you can't let him beat you, right, Jack? And Jack says, no, we was beat when we was born. And I gotta say, millennial motto, yeah. Right the heck there. Yeah. I felt that line right into the pit of my soul.
We lost the game before we even got a chance to play.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, you can't even take the war games way out, like... We tried not to play, but that's not even a choice, you know? that, like, I need that tattooed on my forehead or something. That was, boy, that line hit hard. Whew. So yeah, best line of the movie. And probably why this movie resonates so much with people of our generation. Mm-hmm. But we get to the next morning and the newsies have shown up to put the picket line up again.
Mm-hmm. But, they start seeing the scabs and Jack is among the scabs.
In the nicest suit they have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
He is, absolutely, perfectly clean, no dirt on him for the first time in the movie, hair done, you know, starched mm-hmm. collar, shined shoes. Yeah.
Yeah. And, Weisel tells him he was personally handpicked by Mr. Pulitzer himself to be his personal newspaper boy.
And yeah. This is another thing that they got historically accurate. There was a scandal during the strike where a story started circulating, and it's always been a question whether or not there was ever any basis to this story. But the rumor started circulating that Kid Blink was taking a bribe to strike break. Along with another kid named David Simmons, who was high up in the union. And the rumors accused the boys of being scabs, and a lot of people said, you know, I saw the boys going around wearing nicer clothes than they've ever had before. Where'd they get those nice clothes from? Both boys denied it. Absolutely. 100% denied it. The two boys even resigned their leadership positions to prove that they weren't trying to break the strike. They turned over their leadership to other kids. But the rumor was so pervasive that a group of newsboys actually tried to beat up Kid Blink and started chasing him through the streets. And the police saw Kid Blink running from a group of boys and thought he was leading the group of boys somewhere to do violence and arrested Kid Blink. Which caused all the newsies that were chasing him to follow him to court and mock him as his sentence came down. It was just a fine. He was let go, but it really put a hamper in the strike. So this is actually from a real tactic used, except it was just rumors that were never proven to this day. So
yeah, and they allow David to confront Jack about all of this, and he's even saying, for the first time in my life, I've got real money in my pocket. He's actually, you know, making actual money off doing this, and you know, sometimes you gotta join the dark side to get what you want, and this sort of puts a big nail through the friendship of Jack and David. David even saying, you know, you lied to us, you lied about your past, you didn't even tell us your real name.
But Jack comes back, he's like, you know, I don't have anybody waiting to tuck me in. I gotta survive, which is basically the first thing he said to David when they met. Mm-hmm. You know, David said, my father taught me to be ethical, and Jack said, well, my father taught me to survive.
Yeah.
So, you know, here it is. And, they leave, and, A little scuffle breaks out, and Jack tries to step in, and Weasel says, nope, you lift a finger, your deal is off with Pulitzer.
Yeah, and that, and yeah,
so
that's a bit...
Jack steps back, You know, he lets the scuffle go on. He lets everything go on. He goes to selling newspapers like he did.
Back at home, while going through the drawers, Sarah finds the sandwich that Les wrapped, that Les took from the diner. How many days that sandwich has been in that drawer. Yeah. And sees the story that Denton wrote, and she starts reading it, and David wants no part of it. And he just goes out the window, goes on the fire escape, wants nothing to do with anything that Denton says. So they go out to look for him, and it's this point where they run into the Delaney boys, who who earlier says that they're going to go after their... moments before I said straight to Jack's face, we're going to go after your friend David.
Yeah. But instead they find Sarah.
Yeah.
And they start roughing her up, you know? They start, and it's very sexist in the way they do. This really has the overtone of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Les is playing with a toy wooden sword in the street behind him. He sees him harassing his sister, tries to fight him, but they push him over. David shows up and they get into a fight. And, this is the moment where Batman hears the call of crime happening. This is really, really weirdly filmed, like, kind of a Batman coming to the rescue moment.
By actual Batman.
by what would later turn out to be actual Batman. Yeah, Jack is walking down the street selling his papers, and over the din of the city street, he hears, "Help, help!"
He hears Sarah. He immediately knows that it's Sarah.
But still, it's... How did he... It's a part of the movie that's always bugged me. Like... That's a busy New York street. How did he hear? Because nobody else on the street is reacting. Mm-hmm. It's a very Batman moment. But he hears Sarah calling for help, and he runs in, and the Delaneys are like, "Hey, you know, you can't touch us." And he is like, "Yeah, watch me."
So Jack just completely throws away his deal just to save his friend. And the next scene, we skip to Denton's house, and apparently David has read the story that Denton wrote, and saying, "Did you mean what you wrote?" And he says, "Yeah, I meant it." But since every newspaper in town has blacklisted the story from getting told, they can't get their story told. No one knows about what's going on, and they want to get the word out to all the kids, not just the newsies, but every child laborer in the city.
Yeah, because what Denton's story revealed was the reason Pulitzer and his cronies are so scared of the strike is because they're afraid it's going to impact the child labor market in New York. New York runs primarily on child labor at this time. And they're terrified that if one group of children organizes, then other groups of children will do the same. And that gives Jack an idea. Let's send out, you know, most of the, even though literacy wasn't as widespread then as it is now, a lot of the children had some sort of basic literacy and schooling. Mm-hmm. Slightly earlier than this time, but my great-grandfather went to school for like 2 whole days, but kind of learned to read. He was functionally literate and everything, but he didn't really have formal schooling. My grandmother made it through 5th grade, and I think that was the farthest anybody in her family had made it at the time. And that was in the, like, 1920s, I think. So, you know, functional literacy and formal schooling are not the same thing. So they're like, most of these kids can read. We just have to get the news to them. We've got the newsies. We just need a newspaper to deliver.
So they decide to print their own newspaper. All they need is a printing press. And as Jack was working for Pulitzer, he actually got to sleep in the actual printing press area.
Well, he slept in the kind of basement area where they stored the old equipment. And it turns out that Pulitzer is such a greedy little chump that he never threw away the old printing press when it became obsolete. So he has a previous generation manual printing press. And they stay up all night. Fortunately, Denton knows how to operate one of these things. He knows how to set the letters and put on the ink and all that other fun stuff. Mm-hmm. So they quietly sneak in, and somehow, this is another thing about the movie that bothers me. Those printing presses are quieter than the more mechanical ones that were in use at the beginning of the movie, but they're not, like, silent. So how, you know, Jack says we gotta be really quiet because he's just above us on the next floor or whatever. I don't know how they pull this off, but movie logic. Magic. Yeah.
So yeah, they use newspaper paper, and they essentially print a one-page newspaper detailing a call to arms, as it were, of all child laborers. And they have one more song as this is happening. I believe this is Once and For All.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, not quite. Not quite yet. Mm-hmm. But they start distributing the paper. They send out the newsies. But also Denton makes sure that a copy gets to Governor Theodore Roosevelt, because the other story is that the mistreatment at the refuge was hidden from Roosevelt on Roosevelt's recent tour of the facility.
Which is how Jack was able to escape the first time.
Yeah, Jack has been telling a story the whole time about, I escaped with the help of Theodore Roosevelt. Nobody believes him, really. But it turns out it was true. When Roosevelt was leaving, there was such a hubbub that Jack actually snuck into the kind of undercarriage and rode out of there with nobody seeing him. Mm-hmm. So it turns out it actually was true, and Roosevelt missed, you know, they cleaned the place up and they made the boys all pretend everything was nice. But Denton finally makes sure that Roosevelt knows that they are mistreating all of these boys. Mm-hmm. And Roosevelt is like, thank you, Denton. I will absolutely see to this. But we cut back to the newsies, and they are in the square that they've been hanging out in. And they say, nobody's coming. You know, nobody, yeah, nobody cares.
All the newsies have sent out their little paper to everyone. There's a big montage of every newsie going, hey, you know how to read? Well, read that.
Yeah. But nobody's shown up. And the newsies are finally, they're broken. But Racetrack is like, he hears the bell ringing. And he tells Les, you know, hey, when you hear the bell ringing, you gonna answer? And Les says no. And it's kind of a sad, defeated kind of, like, well, at least we won't.
Yeah,
but we've probably lost.
It's a sad version of The World Will Know from earlier in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're not going to go to work. They can go to work, but we're going to stand our ground. When all hope seems lost, here comes every child worker from all over New York.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of them flood into the square holding protest signs.
My
girls
favorite...
want right too.
Yeah, that's kind of my favorite because you see the front of the picket line is a bunch of girls probably doing the sewing just like Sarah did, holding a sign that says girls want rights.
Yeah. And there's a stable boy on strike, and you know, there's all these signs. I really love the way this is set up because they really do look like the signs were made very quickly by children with barely literate skills, you know, with whatever was nearby in wherever they worked, you know, so it's all made out of different materials, and some of it is paint and some of it is sewn and so, you know, so I really like the production design that it really does look like the kids read this and then put together protest signs from whatever was nearby and went to join the protests. And this is when we kind of get that once and for all rallying cry as all the children come in singing, backing up the song.
Yeah.
And they march to Pulitzer. And Jack and David walk in and they're like, nope, nope, nope. We have the entirety of every child worker in New York behind us. We are seeing Pulitzer. And they get in and Jack opens the window, which Pulitzer hates. I actually love this moment that actually being confronted with the evil that he's been doing.
Yeah.
Pulitzer can't stand. No, I have to shut the windows. I have to keep it out. I have to pretend that those children do not exist because
that is
how he made his wealth on the backs of those children.
Mm-hmm. He even says, you know, I'll break you. I'll end you. You know, you're done, but then it's like you're always talking about the power, that you have the power. Well, we have the power now. It's essentially the power of the press versus the power of the people.
But Jack points out he used the power of the press. He shows them the paper that they printed. And Pulitzer says, but I control every, you know, I have shut down every printing press in this city. Where did you get it from? And he's like, thank you for your printing press. It was you who provided it. And Pulitzer's little lackey that we've been seeing the whole movie actually even points out that this is a really well-written paper. These kids have turned out an excellent paper. And Jack says, thank you for teaching me about the power of the press. I mean, it's a great I learned it from watching you moment.
Yeah.
Pulitzer just can't handle it anymore. So Jack and David come out and whisper something to Lex, and Jack puts Les on his shoulders and screams, "We did it! We beat him!" And it's never really said how they beat him.
The musical, stage musical, does explain this more, and in real life is that while they didn't lower the price of the papers, they did agree to buy back any unsold papers from the newsies.
Yeah, and that is really how the strike ended. The rate hike stood, but at the end of the day... and it was also to keep the kids off the street at the late at night, like we said earlier. Mm-hmm. So there was a certain point in the day where selling time was done. And at that point, any papers you didn't sell, you could bring back and they would refund you the cost of those papers so that you weren't out anything at the end of the day.
Yeah. If anything, worst case scenario, you broke even.
Yeah. At best, you broke even for the day. At worst, you broke even for the day.
Yeah.
So that's how it really ended. In the movie, they are happy. They are dancing in the streets. All the children are happy, even though they didn't actually win anything. The rest of the child laborers didn't actually get anything from this verdict, but, you know, whatever. all of a sudden, a carriage pulls up, and it is the police paddy wagon. And it's got the warden sitting in the front, and all of the children that were locked up in the refuge in the back.
And they let him out.
They let out all of the children, and Jack is going, wait, what? And as he watches, they put the warden into the paddy wagon, and they let Crutchy close the door on him.
Yeah.
It's a nice little moment.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically say, Denton has been going there with Roosevelt this whole time, apparently. And Roosevelt has said that Snyder should be arrested and that all the children should be released from the refuge.
Yes, Crutchy even goes, man, you should have seen it. He came in walking, waving his walking stick like a sword. He should have seen it. Who are you talking about? Your buddy. And he points up, and there's Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah, pulling up in a great carriage. And he thanks Jack for bringing all this to his attention, congratulates him, and asks him. And Denton says, I'm sure he'll give you a ride anywhere. And Jack says, well, would he give me a ride to the train yard?
Yeah, because that's his thing. He wants to go to Santa Fe. Why not?
And he's still got that money from Pulitzer. He didn't give it back, so he's got enough money for fare now. And he hugs David and Sarah and Les and like, well, I'll see you around. Never. Yeah. Bye.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a tear. I mean, the
it's Jacob's sad. Kids, they all cry.
Yeah, you know, Jacob's kids are all crying, but no time for crying because now that this new agreement is put on and the strike is over, time to go back to work.
Yeah. So all the newsies, you know, all the other kids, you know, sawed off to wherever they're going. I don't know where they're back off to. I guess they go back to work because they didn't actually win anything. But the newsies, you know, start lining up to buy their papers again. And they're buying. David makes a really big buy.
100 papers.
Yeah, 100 papes. And everybody's like, whoa, David, high roller, all right. And as they're getting ready to head out, there's a big old commotion. And here comes the carriage back again.
With Roosevelt.
Roosevelt and Jack. And Jack hops out and he says, you know what, Mr. Roosevelt? Thank you very much, but you're right. I've got too much work to do here. And Roosevelt says, well, good luck to you, son. And he gets in and for some reason takes Spot with him.
Yeah. There's
back to Brooklyn. There's no transition. It's just suddenly Spot is in the carriage going back to Brooklyn.
I feel like there's a scene got cut here.
Yeah, it does feel like something got cut. But Jack comes back and plants a big one on Sarah.
Well, he also says that he has family here, so he kind of sees the Jacobs as a family.
Yeah, and probably legally family soon. It does kind of seem like him and Sarah are probably gonna get married before too much longer. But, you know, they do the big Hollywood kiss. Everybody cheers. Everybody hugs.
Big
everybody
song and dance
smiling.
Number over the ending credits.
Yeah, and thus everything goes happily ever after in America, where nothing bad ever happened again. The end.
It's not like we're still having corporations trying to bust up unions or anything.
No, or cops beating people in the streets.
Yeah.
Literally as we record this, probably.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's Newsies! What do you think, Tuesday? Does it have the magic?
Honestly, yeah, it does, but I also see why this was not a hit.
Yeah, First of all, magic everywhere, super magic, twinkly, Tinkerbell sparkles. Yes. Go watch this movie. I love this movie. I was so happy to see that it held up. I absolutely enjoyed watching this for the rewatch. I probably hadn't seen this since I was a teenager. So this was great. This was wonderful. Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating, but I get why it didn't latch on at the time. I think if you go back and watch it now, even if you watched it then and you were like, eh, go back and watch it now. I mean, with all the stuff you're seeing outside your door right now.
Yeah.
This movie totally hits different than it did in 1992.
It feels, it's weird, very weird that we've seen two movies in a row that has hit like that.
Yeah, it's very strange in the fact that both Holes and Newsies deal with this idea of children having to deal with with injustices they were kind of born into.
Mm-hmm.
And trying their best to reshape their part of the world. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's something we need to be reminded of right now. Maybe not just for kids. I mean, our generation grew up with these movies, and we're now in a position where, you know, theoretically at least, we've got the political power now.
Yeah.
We're the adults now. We're the ones that are supposed to be leading things and doing things. And granted, you know, we all know what's happened to millennials. We all know that we're not in the same position as our parents were in our age. But we're in some position.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So maybe this is what we need to go back and watch these things. Take our inspiration. Take it forward. Remember why this generation fought so hard for unions.
Yeah.
You know, by the time our generation got into the workforce, there really aren't any unions left.
Yeah.
They all got destroyed during our parents' generation. Our great-grandparents really, you know, their generation really fought for them. They were really strong during our parents' generation. They fell apart during our parents' generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's one of the reasons we got here, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe we need to remember why we had those in the first place. I don't know. I really like these movies. I understand why in 1992 the importance of fighting against this sort of injustice and fighting for workers' rights and stuff really didn't spark. But once you put it on stage in 2017, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's why the stage musical did so much better.
Yeah.
It's the right story, but it hit at the wrong time.
That, I've noticed that a lot with a lot of the movies that we've watched that weren't hits. They were great stories, just came out at the wrong time.
Yeah, go back and watch this now. If nothing else, to see where Christian Bale came from, because, man. This was probably the first thing I chronologically saw him in. Mm. I would not see Empire of the Sun until after I saw Newsies. So even though that was his earlier film that I should have seen, I wouldn't see it until after I saw Newsies. And then not long, a few years after I saw Newsies, I would see him in American Psycho, which was really the thing that catapulted him mm-hmm. into stardom. Also a great movie that is incredibly important to issues right now. I mean, it's not the sort of thing we typically cover on the show, but, you know, we do primarily speak to an adult audience. It's a little bloody, not gonna lie to you, but if you can handle that, it's a really important satirical movie about strangely a lot of the same issues, greed and corporatism and exploitation of workers and things like that. So maybe give that a watch too while you're at it. Just put the kids to bed first. So yeah, go watch Newsies. Go watch Newsies, and then maybe go into your life and put the lessons from Newsies into practice.
Seize the day.
Seize the day. Union. Union.
Maybe one day we'll go back and watch the stage production for a comparison. But,
yeah, I would love to do that. I will probably just watch it sometime before too long. I might finish it just for pleasure. So
yeah, that's all we can say on Newsies. Good film. Go watch it. So let's move on to next week. Next week is May.
It's May already?
It's May already.
I feel like there's something we do at the start of May.
May there's a day. There's a special day in May.
May the 2nd.
May the 2nd? Maybe.
No.
Cinco de Mayo?
Nah. I mean, yeah, but nah.
May the 4th?
May the 4th be with you!
Yes, next week we are taking a trip back to that galaxy far, far away. 1 year ago, we looked back at the original Star Wars movie. It is time to look back at the sequel as The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, this has long been described as the best film in the Star Wars series. We're going to find out if that's true.
Yeah, we're going to find out if Empire truly is the best of all Star Wars movies. And join us for that. Get your lightsabers, get your ships, get everything. I really wish we could go to Galaxy's Edge. That'd be awesome. But yeah, come back next week as we look at The Empire Strikes Back. And we will talk to you all next time. Bye!
Bye!
Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic,
Twitter at Rewatch the Magic,
and of course, new episodes every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it.